we're going home now. And never, ever, under any circumstances known to God, speak about this again. Is that clear? It is now merely a future therapy bill, agreed?
We make a pact. Right here and now we take this to our grave. Agreed.
I'll never mention it again.
Okay, Barry, we take this to the grave.
I'm going to be sick, she thought. Her legs felt weak, and she reached out and caught hold of the edge of the table to steady herself. It's a dream, she told herself hopefully. I'm not really awake and standing here in the dining room at all. I'm lying in bed upstairs, asleep, and this is only a nightmare like the ones I used to have back in the beginning. I'll close my eyes, and when I open them, I will wake up. It will be gone. The paper will be gone. It will never have been. So she closed her eyes, and when she opened them again, the paper was still there in her hand, with one short sentence printed on it. I know what you did last summer. Hello, Now Playing listeners. This is Arnie, and welcome back for another book review here at Now Playing. We do them infrequently, but I always do enjoy getting a chance to talk about some printed stories as well as the visual ones. And today, for our $10 patrons and donors, we're starting our I Know What You Did Last Summer retrospective series leading up to the Legacy sequel coming out in just a few weeks. As part of that donation series, we're reviewing the original film, the sequel, the direct-to-video sequel, the one-season TV series, and then, yeah, the new movie coming out. And here I am to review the source novel for I Know What You Did Last Summer. Now, I'll admit, going into this retrospective series, I had no idea that that movie wasn't just the entire brainchild of Scream screenwriter Kevin Williamson. I mean, he came up with Scream, so why wouldn't he come up with another story about four teenagers getting attacked by a slasher after a vehicular mishap on a mountain road? But sure enough, this story originated in 1973 in a novel, I Know What You Did Last Summer, written by Lois Duncan. I felt like, as part of the research for that series, I should read this book, and I gotta say, it's a very quick read. It's only 199 pages. I think I read the entire thing in less than 3 hours, and that's including some cross-referencing and some looking stuff up. I mean, this is a young adult novel, so it goes down easy and quickly, and you may be a little bit shocked that this R-rated horror film stems from a young adult fiction, but this is where we'll get into some of the discussion, because this book shares more in common with the movie than I would have expected, but it is certainly its own thing. Now, Lois Duncan is a writer I hadn't heard of before. If I did, I didn't pay any attention to it. But she has written over 40 different books, many of which are young adult fiction novels in the thriller suspense category, some horror, very light horror since it's young adult. And while I do think most of her books are lost to time, and maybe some older Gen Xers who read her or baby boomers when these books were new, I don't know that a lot of people are going back to the 1958 book Love Song for Joyce, or even the 1970 book Peggy. One of her titles did interest me, Killing Mr. Griffin, in 1978, making me wonder if Kevin Williamson took that as inspiration for the film he was going to call Killing Miss Tingle, but no, it has no relation. But outside of I Know What You Did Last Summer, I think Lois' work may be most familiar to people because she did write a 1971 book, Hotel for Dogs. That was made into a movie in 2009 from Paramount and Nickelodeon, starring Emma Roberts. And I remember that movie being kind of a big deal, so while I didn't realize that movie either was based on a novel, she does have two cinematic hits under her belt, as well as a couple other books that were adapted into films. So I looked, and I Know What You Did Last Summer is still in print. I picked it up for Amazon Kindle and started reading it. And I noticed something was a little bit odd about the book right away. In chapter 2, the character Barry, who was played in the movie by Ryan Phillippe, is thinking about his girlfriend Helen, played in the movie by Sarah Michelle Gellar, and it said, she seldom even texted him unless there was a definite reason. And I'm like, wait, texted him? This book came out in 1973. And then the next page, Helen, who works at a news station, says, "I've got a webcast to do in a couple of minutes." So I started digging into this because what the hell is going on? Is Lois Duncan a futurist? No, it turned out that this book was rewritten and republished in 2010 as a way to be able to relate to young readers. Several books by Little Brown Press were updated to be a little bit more current. And I Know What You Did Last Summer was one of those. And so some of the differences are a character named Bud was a Vietnam vet in the original book. Now he's an Iraq war vet. At one point, Julie is listening to a CD player, whereas in the original, she was listening to a record player. And then in the new version, Bud, along with the character of Ray, who was played by Freddie Prinze Jr., go to Starbucks. Whereas in the original, he was headed to a drugstore that had a soda counter or something in it. Well, I wasn't sure how much was changed in this book. And since the rewritten version came out after the movie, I went to eBay, ordered myself a paperback copy of this book that had the movie tie-in cover. It was cheap. And I read the original version of this book. But several times I found myself looking at the Kindle version to see, did they update that? Did they update this clothing choice? Did they update the fact that Ray put a dime in a payphone instead of a quarter or even using a cell phone? And yeah, they made a lot of those changes, including adding cell phones. But the changes are mostly cosmetic that I could tell. The cell phones aren't ever used in a case of emergency in a place where they weren't using a telephone in the original book. But I wanted that 70s feel when reading this book. I wanted to know what Kevin Williamson saw in the original novel that inspired him to make this movie. And yeah, I wanted some of those dated references. If it's a 70s book, I want to hear about Vietnam. I want to hear about the things that are now out of date. So what did I read? Well, in some ways, it's very close to the movie. There are four characters. Our main one is Julie James, who is the character that Jennifer Love Hewitt played in the movie. Now, in the movie, all four characters were high school seniors about to go off to college or other adult adventures. Here, Julie James is just finishing her senior year of high school. Her boyfriend, Ray, or as the book starts, her ex-boyfriend, was a senior and has now gone off to California after high school. So we have what seems actually reasonable is some high school senior boys dating some high school junior girls. And as the book starts, Julie is finishing up her senior year and she gets an acceptance letter into the college she wanted to go to. But there's another letter in the mail, no address, no signature, just saying, "I know what you did last summer." Now in the movie, we know what they did last summer. The movie is told linearly. We start off with the four kids at their graduation party. They go out, they have too much to drink, and they hit somebody by the side of the road. They're not sure who they hit, and that's kind of the mystery of the movie, but we know what they did last summer. They hit somebody in the road and then covered it up by dumping the body in the water, and now somebody is after them for revenge. Here, we don't know what they did last summer. We pick up as Julie's starting the summer after her senior year. Somebody leaves a note of, "I know what you did last summer," but what they did is a mystery to the reader. This is something that's going to be teased out over the course of several chapters, about half the book, giving this novel a real mystery feel as we're left wondering, A, what did they do last summer, and B, who left the note? Who is after them for what they did and why? Now, unfortunately, if you're reading the first edition of this book, the cover tells you what they did last summer. I can't believe that the cover of this book spoils one of the big mysteries. I'm going to spoil it here for you because I feel like it's vital to tell as part of just discussing this book. They didn't hit some random fisherman on the road or some suicidal guy who changed his mind at the last minute. No, the four of them did go out and they were drinking and smoking weed, as kids in the 70s were wont to do, as well as now. and while driving on a curvy road, they hit a 10-year-old boy. He was riding his bicycle home at night. His bicycle had no reflectors. There was no way for the car to have seen him, but they run over the boy, and he dies. Now, they don't try to cover it up the way they do in the movie. They don't hide the body or anything like that, but they also don't take culpability for their actions. They drive away from the boy and call an ambulance anonymously. But the boy does die, and much like the movie, the pact of secrecy does tear these four friends apart. Barry does keep dating Helen, but Barry is a serial cheater, dating a lot of women at his university, sleeping around, but he won't let Helen go because Helen is very attractive and has a bit of fame now, as she has a successful career at a local TV station, unlike in the movie where we see Sarah Michelle Gellar has lost all of her ambition and ended up working at a retail store. But Julie reunites with her old friends after getting that note, and much like the movie, they don't believe anyone necessarily actually knows what they did last summer. They think it's a prank until they all start to get notes. And who is doing it? One of the big suspects is Ray. Much like the movie, Ray went away for a year and is now coming back to town and trying to rekindle his relationship with Julie. But Julie has sort of moved on. She now has a new boyfriend, and while she still has a lot of feelings for Ray, it's mixed up with the whole killed a 10-year-old thing, and so that doesn't seem like a great grounds for a new relationship. So for much of this book, we are teased as to what they did, and finally that's revealed, and then the vengeance begins. But no, the vengeance does not include mass killings. Surprisingly, nobody dies in this book except for the 10-year-old boy. This is not a slasher book. This is a mystery book. There is more violence than you would get on, say, your average episode of Scooby-Doo, but I definitely got Scooby Gang vibes off of this story as four teenagers in the 70s, smoking weed, are going around investigating a mystery and interrogating people, including, just like the movie, the dead boy's sister. Yeah, the Anne H. character in the movie is actually based on a character in the book. And the fact that Kevin Williamson turned this mystery story into a bit of a slasher was really upsetting to Lois Duncan. She said in an interview she was, quote, appalled by that adaptation. And part of that reason is in 1989, one of Lois Duncan's children, her daughter, was murdered at the age of 18. This very much changed Lois Duncan's view on thrillers and violence. She, after her daughter's death, didn't write any more mysteries or thrillers. She ended up writing children's picture books. Obviously, that is a tragedy that would change one's perspective greatly, but that her pretty non-lethal book got turned into a 90s slasher is a great shift in tone. And if you do listen to our movie review, I go into it a little bit, how the original concept of that movie was more mystery thriller, kind of Hitchcockian, and then through reshoots and test screenings, it leaned more into the Scream slasher craze. But not this book. This book is all young adult mystery. I thought we were getting to the murders. I was expecting murders when Barry is lured out alone in the night by the stalker. He gets shot in the stomach. I'm like, okay, the killer's using guns. That's unexpected. But Barry lives. The question is, will he be paralyzed for life? Is his football career ruined? But that's as violent as it gets. The rest of the stalker is tormenting and planning his revenge and probably planning some fatal violence at the end of his plot, but the book never gets there. So if we don't have slasher violence, what do we have? We have a classic whodunit. Who is leaving the notes? Who is seeking revenge? Now, in our review of the movie, I call out Kevin Williamson because I feel like I Know Who Killed Me the movie is a little bit of a cheat. I don't think anyone could reasonably deduce that they actually hit a fisherman named Ben Willis, and Ben was alive, and Ben was the father of a dead girl who was dating a guy who's the guy they thought they hit and killed. It's a lot of convolutions, and while there's several suspects set up in the movie, they're all red herrings, and at the end, much like Friday the 13th, the killer just reveals himself, and you never could have guessed that was the person because you'd never seen them before. Lois Duncan plays by more strict whodunit rules. There's several suspects, including the group of four themselves, most specifically, possibly Ray in the beginning, but there are other characters. Again, there's the dead boy's sister. There's the character's parents. There's Julie's new boyfriend. There's a new guy living in Helen's apartment complex chatting her up. I don't know that enough clues are specifically dropped where you'd be able to figure out the killer before the book tells you, but if you just read a lot of these stories or watch a lot of them as I do, I was able to figure out both twists. Yes, there are two twists at the end of this book, and I kind of suspected where Lois was taking this story. But she plays by the rules, unlike the movie. Clues are dropped, characters are made suspect, and one of the suspects is indeed the stalker. And I'll say that the end twist beyond who the stalker is clever. I'm glad there's a second twist and not just who did it. It makes for some extra fun, and so I'll give the book that. So, is the book any good? Should you read I Know What You Did Last Summer? Overall, I thought the book was fine. I can't say that I thought it was something special. I can't say, oh my god, you have to read this. And even if you're a super fan of the movie, I don't necessarily think you need to go back to the source material because it is very dated. It is aimed at a younger audience and it's not a slasher. The fun people have with the movie, I think, is related to the kills and related to the suspense. And while there's a little suspense in this book, it's just so teen-oriented that it has kid gloves on. I'll credit Lois for the way she teases out the mysteries, one of which I've spoiled for you, as the book cover spoiled about the dead boy. I like that writing technique. I like that she put multiple layers of mystery into the story, but the characters are exceptionally thin and one-dimensional. I didn't necessarily root for any of them. Julie James is our primary protagonist, but while most of the book is told from her perspective, I didn't find myself really empathizing with the character as she's written on the page. The book was a mildly entertaining way to kill a few hours, but, pardon the pun, I never got hooked. I didn't care about the characters, or after the death was revealed, I didn't care so much about the story. And honestly, if this book hadn't been turned into a movie, it wouldn't be a shame if it stayed forgotten on some dusty library shelf untouched for decades. It's not a bad book. It's absolutely nothing special. And I don't know what Kevin Williamson saw when reading this book that really sparked something in him, unless he read it at a formative age. You know, I read Alfred Hitchcock and the Three Investigators when I was very young. Those are cheesy young adult children's mysteries as well that probably many of you listening have never heard of. And that's right. You shouldn't have heard of them. They're not special. But they meant something to me because they were current when I was young. And that's where I put Lois Duncan's I Know What You Did Last Summer. It's not special, but if you have a youngster who is thriller curious, I suppose you could do worse than to give them the 2010 rewrite where things are updated so that a current child wouldn't be put off by the thought of a drugstore selling coffee. So if the book is okay, how's the movie? Well, that review is coming out today, as I said, for Silver Level donors and patrons, and hopefully you'll join us to hear all five of those I Know What You Did Last Summer reviews. I'll admit, as of this recording, I haven't revisited the I Know What You Did Last Summer movie in probably over 20 years. I'm really looking forward to going back and reevaluating that film, which I remember really loving in the 90s, And then I'm kind of excited to see what this new version will bring, since they're bringing back Jennifer Love Hewitt and Freddie Prinze Jr. I don't know about you, but for me, a legacy sequel that checks up on old characters is more exciting than just a straight reboot. So you can find out how to hear all of those reviews by going to nowplayingpodcast.com/donate. It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating and allowing us to do the free shows we do every single Tuesday without missing a single week in about 14 years. Every Tuesday, a new show, thanks to donors and patrons. And to everyone who's listened to this book review, thank you for joining me. These are always a little bit harder to do than the movie reviews because they're solo, they require a little bit more prep, and the movie reviews themselves require quite a bit, but they're a passion for all of us that do these book reviews, and so thank you for listening to this episode. And if you're not as interested in books as movies, and if you're not joining us today for the I Know What You Did Last Summer movie review, well, we'll be back with a totally free Tuesday show of Species 3 next week. Once more, thanks to all of you, and I hope you'll join us this summer as we review these movies. Talk to you soon.
The secret dies with us. Say it.
The secret dies with us.
The secret dies with us.
The secret dies with us.
Thank you for listening to this Now Playing podcast review.
The energy you give to the universe always comes back to you.
We hope you enjoyed the show.
Oh, it's all good. And believe me, it is all good.
Help us spread the word about this show by leaving a 5-star review on Stitcher, Podbean, iTunes, or your podcast store of choice.
Any fresh kill? How about Freddy or Jason or somebody?
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
Take deep breaths. Think of something happy from your childhood.
What if I don't have anything happy from childhood?
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
He does work hard. Work hard on my ass.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
One of us is hiding something.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
Hush now. No more screaming, no more running. It's time to die.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
I'm not interested in what's right anymore, Ray. I want to do what's smart.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Kids like you should be out having fun, drinking, partying, running people over, getting away with murder, things like that.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2025, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
What did you do last summer?